pussy sweeter than McCready when I meet her in the morning.
The morning.
With the morning glory.
The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Joe Simpson for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Triangle Yesteryear. On this program, you'll hear reminiscences of life in earlier times around North Carolina's Triangle area, and sometimes other parts of the state, written by local authors. On today's program, I'll continue reading excerpts from Snowbird Gravy and Dishpan Pie, Mountain People Recall, a collection of stories gathered by Patsy Moore Ginns. Continuing with Chapter 7, Animals. Losing the Cud. The rhododendron, they call it now, we used to call it laurel. And the other, they call it laurel now, and we call it ivy. It's poison. It'll kill sheep, cattle. They'll eat it in the wintertime when they're snowed up. The laurel, the rhododendron now they call it, won't poison them, but it'll just starve them to death. It'll just cause them to vomit all they're eating up all the time. But what we called ivy, what they call laurel now, it'd kill them dead. There was no way to save them when they'd eat a mess of it. Laurel had given them tack stomach, we called it. They held them and poured them down about a pint of linseed oil. Then, when they'd lose their cud, the way they'd fix their cud was to cram a dish rag down, or get them to eat one. They'd usually, if they wasn't awful sick, they'd eat a dish rag, and in about 30 minutes, they'd be chewing their cud. Ray Hicks, born 1922, Watauga County. Injured stock. If a horse got hurt, cut or something, you just go out and restrain it, tie it, and then sew it up. I remember one time down here, my father-in-law had a nice horse. He was going down grade, going down to the barn. He stepped on a stick, and it flew up and hit him right underneath, just laid open his internals, you know. Well, we put them back, sewed him up. But he lived about 2 days and died. Infections, you know. We didn't have no veterinarians. You just had to do the best you could. Splint their legs. Do something if you could to try to help them. But in so many cases, you'd lose them. George Perkins, born 1916 in Mitchell County. The Robin at the Milk Gap. There come a robin. A beautiful robin would sit on the stake, the gap stake, right at my milk gap, and sing to me. It'd come and sing its song to me every morning and evening, and it liked to hear me sing. It'd come to hear me sing. And so I finally got on out with the other boys. They showed me how to build a flip shot, a slingshot, some called them a flip shot, out of the old red inner tube that was in the Model T and the Model A Ford. And then it come on up to World War II, and they made synthetic rubber. And you ain't got an inner tube no more that you can build one out of. It ain't got no flip. It's got a little, but it flips slow, and they can get away. But that red rubber now, that'd kill 'em quick. The rock went so fast. Reminds me of that time back there in the Bible, where David killed Goliath with his sling, that flip sling he had then. One of them where you put a rock in it, one piece of leather loops around your wrist, and the other end was loose, and you held it with your thumb, and you come around and throw, and boy, you could hit straight with that. And that's the way he hit through the armor of Goliath. And so I got out with the other boys, and they learned me how to make a slingshot. One morning, or one evening, I forgot which one it was, I sighted at my robin there. I'd just take a shot at it. I didn't want to kill it. I just wanted to shoot at it with my slingshot. And doggone it, I killed it. I sat down and cried. Never did nary another one come back. That was all the one that ever got used to me. That'd do that. I hoped another one would come back, and I'd never shoot it. I throwed my slingshot down and never did carry another one. Then we was teached with our conscience not to kill little birds unless it was a mean bird. And you know, I studied over that. That bird took up corn. And the crows, they ain't mean. That's the way God created 'em. They don't know they're mean, them little chipmunks, picking corn up. But them other boys had me believing they was mean. And the mockingbird, it would take up corn. They said to kill all the mean birds with the slingshot, but not to kill the robin and the sparrow and the snowbird and all the little harmless birds. Leave them and not tear their nests up. And you know, it was a song. If I was a little bird, I tell you what I'd do. I'd build my nest in a tall willow tree where the bad boys couldn't tear it down. Did you ever hear that? I'd sing that. My brother, he'd get him a slingshot, and it didn't bother him to kill. He'd go to the robin's nests where they was setting on their eggs, and he could hit so good with a slingshot that he'd shoot the top of their head off, it sticking up out of the top of their nest. Shoot it off of the nest. Ray Hicks. What I know of animals. Now, here's the way it is. If you get too brave, you'll get killed or hurt or ruin your life. Get too brave. Now, what caused people back yonder to suffer a lot, and caused me to suffer till I learned, was teached me of bears. I met bears picking blackberries. And now there's some way, now, with an animal. I can't help but believe in me that an animal won't hurt me. They feel that I won't hurt them. And I met this black bear picking blackberries. They eat berries, bears do, and I met it back there picking sweet blackberries and seeding them. Briars tore down. And me and my sister was picking, and she was way around from me. I heard this a-coming, and I thought it was her coming around and meeting me. And when it come around, it was a big black bear. It stopped close to me as that door there. Boy, it had weighed 400 or 500 pounds. Gosh, its hair a-shining. And the way it held its head, yeah, it was pretty. So, at once, it hit me that it might want to hurt this little boy. And I just said, "Bear," I says, "I love you. You won't hurt me." It just stood there a while, and I just stood there. Then it just turned around and went back, left me a-standing there with my berry bucket. Now, if I'd have throwed that at it, now that's the way people gets hurt, throwing a stick or rock at it. Usually they'll pick up a rock, 'cause there's plenty of rocks in these mountains. Hit it in the head, and maybe it'll hurt it. Then it'll get you if it's hurt. And I met another one, a bear, down yonder, coming one night on an old mountain road. It was an old wagon road that this house lumber was hauled up when Dad and my grandfather, his dad, hauled it up with the yoke of steers. They got this lumber down yonder off of that rough mountain when it was ice and snow, and he sawed it, and then they hauled it up this old wagon steep road, built this house. Anyway, I met this bear down there that night on this road. It was still showing a little light, and I said, "Now, is that a bear, or is it somebody a-rolling a stump or something off the road?" I kept easing a little closer and a little closer. I'd seed a bear before, and I knowed how they looked. He was a dark un, and I says, "No, that's a big black bear, probably the one I've seed before." And so I just stopped in my tracks, 5, maybe 10 feet from him. It a-looking at me, and me a-looking at it. So I could tell of its actions that it seed I was scared. And if I'd start to run, that'd build it up just like a biting dog, and it would have caused it to kill me. See, it was a coward. Now, a little coward, if it sees it's bluffed somebody, it just builds it on up, and it'll just say, "I'll just kill you." Dogs is that way. I said, "Well, I can't run. It's dark, and in this thicket I can't run. If it's going to get me, it'll just have to get me." Well, I'd read this story in school about Davy Crockett, where he'd grinned a coon to death. And I remembered what it said about him a-fightin' a grizzly. Now, a grizzly bear, they tell me that they're a lot worse than a black bear. Said Davy tried to grin the grizzly out, and it jumped on him. He cut it. He was stout, a big stout young man that knowed every way of fightin'. So he cut the grizzly and saved his life. Killed him. So I thought of that, and I just stood and smiled in the dark. And it would wiggle that way. Turn its head and look that way and look back at me. And I thinks to myself, I believe that bear's going to tackle me yet. Directly, it'd just ease a little, just like it was easing a little toward me. But I didn't move, I just stood there. Directly, it turned its head and looked out to the left of me. And there was an old water break there, where we had cut it to keep from washing the road away. And it just creeped and turned away and went out through the woods. And I watched it go out through the woods. Leaves rattling, twigs breaking. It went on out. Now I'll tell you, it's like that with snakes or anything. Honeybees, if you'll use the wisdom that you can take from God and all the things he created. but there's one out of about 100 will get you, no matter what you do. But now, that's the way it is with snakes. Snakes don't want to bite if you leave them alone. But there's one, like I said, now and then, and it don't want to hurt you. Usually you can get by it if you leave it alone. It's a shed and a hide, and it's got its hide down over its eyes, and it'll fight blindfolded if it hears something coming up on it. Can't see. And that's the reason snakes bite. They're scared. But usually, if you'll stand back, even if it's over their eyes, they won't hurt you. If they don't smell that fear in you that you're going to hurt them. Now, the way God fixed it, they can smell that, or wind it some way or another from your body that you'll kill them, and that you will kill everything that you run on that you're afeard of. As long as I killed every little snake, say, I'll get shed of you, you might hurt somebody else. You'll be gone. That thing raised back. You couldn't kill them all. And then it hit me that when I got to where I don't kill a snake will lay and love me. It won't pay a bit of attention. Just lay there. Look at me, but it won't bother me. I don't bother them. I don't touch them. I just stand there and look at them. Directly, most of them will just crawl off right easy. Don't bother me at all. Now, honeybees and a dog, most of them can tell, unless it's one of them real mean ones that's been hit so much by people. And that's the way a snake is that's lived where people have hit it, and it's lived. Where they didn't get it killed. It got well. Well, from then on, it don't take no chances. It'll bite you before you even know it. But a snake or a dog that nobody's messed with, I ain't afeard of none of them. I ain't afraid of being with none of them. Now, a bee won't sting me. Now, robbing the bees, if I don't mash on them, don't happen to mash on them, they won't sting me at all. But if I happen to mash them, they don't understand that, and they think I'm trying to kill them. Now, you mash one, and the others will sting you. You mash that one, and they smell it. They smell the stuff that's inside. And they'll cover you black, eat you up. They'll get around your neck. I've robbed them without a veil or anything. If I don't mash none, I don't get a sting. Ray Hicks. The Cry of a Panther. Back in the old days, they walked everywhere, and my grandmother had been sent to a neighbor's house for something. She was wearing an apron and a bonnet and a shawl. During that time, they had a lot of panthers that were in the mountains. And she started back through the woods, and she heard the cry of a panther. She started running. But the panther was gaining on her, so she had understood that all the panther would do would be to get the odor of the person. If you dropped a piece of clothing, it would stop to tear up that clothing before it went on. So she dropped her bonnet, and then later she dropped her shawl. Then she dropped her apron. By that time she was climbing over a rail fence, and she got away. The panther didn't follow her on home. She was frightened. She was only about 12 years old, she said. I never did hear of anybody ever being attacked by a panther, but I know they were all frightened of them. I heard those tales even as I grew up. We were very frightened, even of a wildcat's cry. We thought maybe it might be a panther. Pearl Randolph, born 1912 in Yancey County. Elk. Now, Elk Park, I would say, actually also got its name from elk. Because Banner Elk did, too. There was actually elks, and large ones. Now, the elks and banners was what gave Banner Elk its name, the family of banners. Now, all the elks are gone. Doyle I. Oakes, Sr., born 1909, in Avery County. Fox hunting. I started fox hunting when I was about 11 years old, something like that. And we'd go out yonder on that bluff peak and lay out there all night long and listen to them dogs run. Sometimes go on to the Flat Rock Mountain, stay all night and come back up in the day the next day and lay down and rest a while and go on into the cornfield or the sawmill or wherever we'd go to work. Nobody paid it no mind. Now, we'd take about 2 nights a week fox hunting. And I kept that up for, I don't know how long. When I was 14 years old, I worked in a logging camp in Coons Creek. That's in Wilkes County. I worked in there for, a couple of years. When I come out of that, I went to cutting timber then for myself. I was on my own at that time. I followed cutting timber there for several years, fox hunting all the time. I kept my dogs in a lot. I'd go out there, and I'd open the gate. I'd turn them dogs out and start them back to the mountain up yonder, and I'd come and get in my car and go around the mountain to get on top. By the time I'd get to the far end up there, they'd go through there, just about 2 or 3 mile on top. Then they'd strike, and I'd be up there where I could hear every little crumb, almost. Now, when they strike is when they hit the track, when they scent the fox. Then they go to barking, but up to then they just keep quiet. The one that goes to barking when they're coming after 'em, before the strike, is what they call a babbler. Any fox hunter'd shoot one of them, we'd just kill it and be done with it. I could tell every one of my dogs, I don't care how many dogs was in that bunch, I could tell my dog's mouth, voice different from any of 'em. And Cleet Choate had one, and I had one that was just outstanding. That was all there was to it. Yeah, they're clear. Some of 'em clear. Some of 'em has a more of a throaty, some throaty voice, but the majority of 'em has a clear-cut tone. And the harder they run, you could tell it if you was listening at all, the harder they run, the better it sounds, because it sounds like the voice is actually being knocked out of 'em by their leaps, you know. I had one had a bawlin' voice. Then he'd chop it up. Ba-oo-woo-woo-woo-woo-woo. Man alive, that'd jerk you off the ground. And that was all there was to it. And when they're all running together, on the scent of that fox, man, it's just one roar, that's all. You can tell yours. You can distinct the mouth of each dog. There's just a little difference there. Now, I have knew mine and Cleet's to run as much as 11 hours. When they got to the house here, buddy, they'd lay down, and you didn't have to worry about 'em for a day. They was just like you'd shot 'em. When you'd feed 'em, they just lay there. No, never did have one to run itself to death. I've had 'em to run to start in at the front part of the night and run till 12 o'clock the next day. They run the fox in a hole. When it takes a notion to tree, it'll go in the hole. Now that mother fox that's got the little cubs, the dogs get after her, and when she passes by that den, you hear her bark for them to get in the house. That's a warning to 'em. You hear the fox bark, too, just like a feist dog bark. A feist, a little bitty feller, high-toned and sharp. But they won't bark unless it's a female with cubs. They'll pass every once in a while, too, buddy. When you're running one of 'em, they'll pass by that hole. Get them baby dolls in the house. Yeah, sometimes they catch 'em. Just tear 'em all to pieces. Now, a gray fox, I've killed a few of them, because they're hateful to run anyway. They just get in the bush and, just like a rabbit, run around and around. The dogs can't run 'em. But what you do is you just go up on top of the mountain, and you just sit there and listen to it. I couldn't explain it to you, just how interesting it would be to you just to stand and listen to them dogs. You know, when anything is putting its heart into anything, like you are right there now, you're putting your heart in what you're doing. You can tell that. All right, that's just exactly the way that the dogs are running when they're trailing fox. From when they first strike to when they get up there, why, there's just as much difference in the sound of that as there is from night and day. And I've thought the fox enjoys it. Sure enough, I have. I've heard fox hunters say that certain foxes have really laughed at the dogs. You take one, say, that's going to be a-coming up through the field yonder. If he's got just a little distance between him and the dogs, he can run around, make just one great long leap or two, and the dog'll run by it. And then it'll turn back. Them poor old dogs will run plumb to the top of the mountain and circle half a dozen times before they find out where it went. Yes, ma'am. Shut their mouths right there. That is what is enjoyable, because it tries 'em out just to see what a fox dog really is. Now on the trail, it's every one of them trying to outrun the other one. I had one, I'd give a man $100 every time anything got ahead of it for the rest of the night. She'd shut her mouth that quick. Next time she opened it, there wouldn't be nothing ahead of her but the fox. And there wouldn't nothing else get ahead of her but the fox either. Yeah, they fight each other. Just fight all the time. That's what makes it so interesting. They're every one trying to outdo the other one, you know. And you can tell it by the tone of the voice. That's right. I think the dogs are actually enjoying the race. I do. When the race is over and the fox goes in the hole, they just stop and come straight to you. Now, there's a lot of deer in here, but the majority of 'em won't run a deer. I don't know how they do it, but that deer just absolutely can lose that bunch of dogs right in the middle of the field. Now, there's a lot of dogs that's got a better nose than others. Some of them's very keen-scented, and some of them's common. You can take a dog that's very keen-scented, and you can let a fox come through here when it's cold, and that dog will follow it. Now, when it's hot, it won't leave a scent as long as it does when the ground is cold. Millard F. Pruitt, born 1911 in Allegheny County. Snake Tails. When I first bought this place, it had all growed up around the house, and me and my wife had to come over here and clean up around it so we could get in it. It was chock full of black snakes. The house, in all these closets, the black snakes had went up these rat holes. And I'm telling you the truth, we was in bed one night, and something got cold, real cold, around my feet. I said, "What have you got in this bed, hun?" And she said, "Nothing." I said, "The hell, there's something cold as ice." She said, "There ain't nothing." But I kept a-kicking it. It'd move. I'd kick it, and the darn thing'd move. And I said, "I'm going to get up and turn the light on. There's something in this bed." She said, "Ain't nothing in it." So I got up, and when I raised up the covers, there was a dadgum old black snake. It was coiled up around my feet. Well, I just took him. I fool with snakes, and if you grab one quick, a rattlesnake or anything, copperhead or anything, and give it that, you'll break its neck. I just grabbed that one, and when I flipped it, I jerked its head off. I mean just jerked it smack off, like a whip. Yep, like a whip. So I throwed it out the door, and she said, "I ain't staying here no more." "Well," I said, "just go somewheres else till I get him out of here." So then, later, I brought her brother's little girl, and we raised her, you know, one of my wife's brother's little girls, sent her to school. So she called me Tom all the time. Tom Stanley is my name. So she said, "Tom, there's something in the closet, and it'll come out. Must be a rat or something. And when I go in there, it'll go back." Well, I kept a-watching, but I couldn't see a thing in there. Not nary a thing there. So I told my wife, "You keep a-watch and see what that young'un is a-seeing." And it was this black snake. It would smell cooking and stuff and come out. And when she'd open the door and see it, she'd slam it and run back. So I got my .22 rifle, you know. And I said, "When you see it, honey, just back away. Don't say a thing. Don't shut the door. Just come to me." Well, I was out in the yard, and she come. Said, "Tom, the mouse is in there." Well, I went in there, and that thing, you know, that tongue a-flickin'. So I fired, and I heard something fall in the other room. Crash! I said, "Gosh!" I got the snake and drug it out. And I said, "You better go in the other room. There's something broke." So my wife said, "You shot my lamp in there on the dresser." But I got that black snake. So I went on and on a long time, and I got him out of the house, and I stopped all but about 10 of the holes, got the house fixed up. And I was down here cutting corn in the fall of the year, and I heard that automatic rifle, ding, ding, ding. And I knowed it was something bad, because my wife wouldn't have been firing that thing. So, son, I had my pistol, and I run as hard as I could and come into the house. When I got there, she was down at the chicken house a-shooting. Went down there, and she was shooting black snakes. They'd go in there and get this egg in their mouth, swallow it, and then they'd go through a knothole and bust it. That's the way they do it. And if they ain't got a knothole to bust it with, they'll take and coil up like they're going to tie a knot and bust it. And the next year, after that, I found two. And, you can believe it or not, it's the God's truth, they started swallowing one another's tails. Each snake had swallowed up as far as they could, and they both was dead. Both of them was swallowing each other. Now another one, see, my wife stayed over in Bates Creek, and they had cradled, cut, oats. You know, they'd build a rail outfit to stack 'em on, so the old stuff was high. And it had growed up with grass in it. They wanted me to cut the grass. So I went up there to look at it. And this is the truth. It ain't no joke. It's a fact. I don't know if you've ever heard of a stinger snake or not. A hoop snake. It rolls. A stinger on the end of its tail, and it's got a joint in it, just like your finger. I was up there, and that thing would stick up this way and just disappear. And I fit it till the sweat was rolling off of me. It was sometime the 1st of August, and I fit that thing until finally at last I made a lick at it and got it. You can believe it or not now, but Preacher Monroe, he's dead now, and a lot of 'em seen it. Its head was slick, just as slick as it could be, as any snake. And it was fine hair, just as fine, all over it. You could rub your hand over it, and it was just like rubbing a hog breast. And that there joint there, nobody around here had ever seen one like it before. I wish I'd cut it off and saved it. It was just like a bone. It could stick that in the ground and stand up straight, just as straight as you're standing. They call 'em stinger snakes. We hung it up there till it rotted and dried. People would come from everywhere to see it. Its hair was short. I mean, you could rub your hand over it and feel it. And it could stand straight up, and its head would come out like that. When I'd strike at it, it would disappear, get back down under some stuff. Then it would stick its head out somewheres else. Stanley Hicks, born 1911, Watauga County. The Habits of Snakes. But in the woods, we had more snakes then, see? We had the rattlers up here then. See, we had the timber rattlers. But after I moved, after my time, I can't remember seeing none. But my mother's dad, she said, killed 'em right up yonder where they was going to hoe corn. And we ain't hardly got a one any more, nor any copperheads. But we never did have any copperheads up on the mountain. They was all along the water where they could get frogs. And, too, they couldn't stand the cold that the rattler could stand. That's another thing that I studied, that we don't have the snakes around any more that we used to have, because the time has come that we ain't got no frogs. And snakes won't stay where there ain't frogs to swallow. What we've got any more of rattlers and copperheads is where I've been out gathering herbs along the watercourse, up a little bit from it, in a valley, where what few frogs there is here stays. Nothing ain't going to stay where there ain't no water and nothing to eat. We are going to hunt for something to eat if there's any chance to find it, and water. Now, there was a place over yonder that was old-timey, talk of rattlers and more copperheads. So I was a-gathering herbs, and these old men down the river said, "Ray, if you go in there, you won't live to get out. You'll be eat up with snakes." And I went all in there and never did see a snake of no kind. And then, finally, me and my boys was in there and seed a few of these here. They run in a den of these here little brown snakes. And I was bit by one of them. Well, it hurt and swelled my ankle a little. Ray Hicks. We've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Yesteryear. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Joe Simpson for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Triangle Yesteryear is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening. I think we can hear what I say. Nothing could be finer than to be in Carolina in the morning.